Take your Bibles tonight, if you would, and turn to the John chapter 9, the ninth chapter of John. Most Bible scholars think that the events that are recorded here happened immediately after those recorded in John chapter 8. And you might think, well, it's a strange thing to say, but many of the chapters in John use the phrase "after this," which implies there was some time that transpired before, between the event that was about to be described and the event that was just described. But in this case, they think that what is recorded in John chapter 9 happened right after what happened in John chapter 8. And of course, you remember in John chapter 8, it started with the woman taken in adultery that Jesus forgave as all her accusers walked away when he said, "You that are without sin, cast the first stone." And then his discussion with the Pharisees. And we're going to see tonight that that discussion is going to go on, but about a different subject. And again, chapter 9 will remind us of what happened in chapter 5 of John. In chapter 5, he healed the lame man, the man that was lame for 38 years by the pool of Bethsaida, and he did it on the Sabbath day. And he told that man to take up his bed and go home, take up his bed and walk. And, of course, the Pharisees got after him because he broke the Sabbath, according to them. He healed a man on the Sabbath, which was against their law. And so they got on him about that. And they really never forgave him for that. And so we're going to see in chapter 9 that he does the same thing. Doesn't heal a man lame, but heals a blind man. So we start in verse 1 tonight. "And as Jesus passed by, he saw a man which was blind from his birth." Now, when we get down to verse 14, we'll see that it's the Sabbath day again. It's mentioned in verse 14 of chapter 9. And so Jesus and his disciples were probably on their way into the temple to keep the Sabbath. In that day, most of the beggars, the blind people and those that couldn't work, that made their living by begging for alms, would gather around the temple entrances. Because their thought was, well, people on their way to the temple will be more apt to, you know, share with me and give me an alms so that I could live on that alms. And so Jesus and his disciples, as they were going into the temple, saw this man which was blind from his birth. Now, you might say, well, how did John know that he was blind from his birth? I don't know. Maybe he talked to him. I'm sure he heard the Pharisees question this man's parents. Said, "Hey, is this your son? Was he born blind?" So that's probably how he knew. He was there when they had that discussion. This is the only person in the Bible that it's mentioned that he had his malady, the thing that was wrong with him, from his birth. No place else in the Bible is there a person mentioned like this man. Look at verse 2. "And his disciples asked him." So the disciples asked Jesus, saying, "Master, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Now, the question reflects the thought of the day and the thought that some people even have today, that illness results from sin. Back in this day, that's what they thought. And yes, there's some sickness that results from sin. I mean, some sin that we do affects our body, and as a result of that, we get sick or do harm to our body. But it's not always the case. Sin is not always the result of sin. I mean, yes, you know, in general, because of the evil in the world, I mean, sickness is here, but it's not necessarily when somebody's sick that you say, well, that person or his parents or her parents must have sinned. Now, again, if the disciples thought about what they were asking, they wouldn't ask the question the way they did. This man was blind from his birth. So if he sinned and his blindness was a result of his sin, when did he sin? When he was in the womb? Well, there's no biblical no biblical basis for somebody being able to sin in the womb. And so if they really would have thought about it, and maybe at this point they didn't know he was blind from birth. I mean, maybe they didn't find that out till later on in the chapter when they heard the Pharisees question his parents. But they thought, well, he's blind, and so either he sinned or his parents sinned that have resulted in this blindness. But Jesus answered in verse 3, "Neither hath this man sinned, nor his parents, but that the works of God should be made manifest in him." And so Jesus said, neither one of them. His sin did not cause this blindness. His parents' sin did not cause this blindness. And so he brushed those two possibilities away. But then he said something that has confounded Bible scholars down through the ages, and they've had a lot of discussion on it. Jesus added, "But that the works of God should be made manifest in him." And some Bible scholars say, well, here's a case of God having a man be born in blindness, live his life in blindness up until this day, so that Jesus could work a miracle in his life. And so they say this man was predestinated before he was born to be blind, and again, so that he could be in the right spot, that when Jesus came by, he could show his power and work a miracle and restore his sight. I don't believe that. I don't believe that God did this to this man. Why was he blind? I don't know. He was born blind. And what Jesus was saying is, it doesn't do us a lot of good to debate why he was born blind. He's blind. I'm going to do something about it. I'm going to restore his sight. And so he told the disciples, the blindness has resulted from no sin. Notice what he says in verse 4 and verse 5. "I must work the works of him that sent me while it is day. The night cometh when no man can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world." And what he was saying there, I think, goes along with the fact that God did not create this man blind. I mean, he's blind, and Jesus noticed that. But Jesus said, "Look, I have a limited amount of time to work in this world. And while I'm here, I'm going to do the works of the one that sent me. I'm going to do the works of my Father." He says, while I'm here, I'm the light of the world, and I'm going to give light to this blind man. So here's what he does. Verse 6, when he had thus spoken, he spat on the ground and made clay of the spittle, and he anointed the eyes of the blind man with the clay. So he spit on the ground. He made like mud, clay, and he anointed the eyes of the blind man. Now it's interesting. The Greek word for spat is P-T-U-O. I'm not sure how to say it. P-T-U-O. But it not only includes the act of spitting, it includes the sound of spitting in the word. And so when Jesus spit on the ground, he made the sound of spitting. And as I was thinking about that as I studied, it's probably so the blind man could know what he was doing. Okay? He heard the sound of Jesus spitting. He felt the clay go on his eyes. Now, the Jews in that day believed that that spittle was beneficial in curing blindness. We read over in Mark chapter 8. That Jesus healed a blind man that was in Bethsaida by spitting on his eyes and then touching him. But we read in Matthew chapter 20 where he healed two blind men simply by touching their eyes. Okay? So in this case, he didn't spit on this guy's eyes. He spit on the ground, made some clay or mud, and anointed his eyes with with that. And then he said, verse 7, and said unto him, go wash in the pool of Siloam, which is by interpretation sent. He went his way, therefore, and washed and came seeing. So again, Jesus put the clay on his eyes. He said, I want you to go wash in this pool. And for the benefit of his Gentile readers, he interpreted the Hebrew, Siloam, and it's in the Greek it means sent. This was a pool that was located southeast of the city, just outside the gate, and the gate was right by the temple. And so this blind man wouldn't have far to go. He'd just go outside the gate, and the pool would be right there. Again, somebody probably had to lead him because he was still blind at this point. And again, it wasn't the spittle, it wasn't the water in the pool, it was this man's faith in Christ and his obedience to Christ that brought about the healing. And so he did what Jesus said to do, and he came back seeing. Okay? Now, look at verse 8. The neighbors, therefore, and they which before had seen him, that he was blind, said, is not this he that sat and begged? The fact that it mentioned neighbors suggests that maybe he went by home. I mean, if he'd been blind from birth, the fact that he could now see, I'm sure he'd want to tell his parents. I'm sure he'd want to share the good news with them. And so he probably did go home. Some of his neighbors saw him. He wasn't being led by somebody else. He was walking on his own. And so they noticed. I mean, we'd notice something like this. They noticed. And they said, is not this he that sat and begged? Isn't this the blind man? Isn't this the one we saw begging this morning, asking for alms because he could not see? In verse 9, some said, again, these were the neighbors and those that saw him sat and begged, this is he. Others said, he is like him. But he said, I am he. So there was a disagreement. Some said, when they asked the question, is this the blind man? Some said, yes, it is. This is him. We recognize him. Others said, well, it's not him. It may look a little bit like him. And I'm sure his appearance changed. I mean, just the way he, again, he walked. He wasn't led. And so others said, it's not him. It can't be him. It looks a little bit like him, but it's not him. And he finally said to sell it, he said, I'm the guy. I was the one that was blind. I was the one that you saw this morning sitting and begging. And so in verse 10, therefore said they unto him, how were thine eyes open? How did this happen? Last time we saw you, you were blind. You could not see. And now your sight has been restored. You have. And by the way, if there was an eye doctor around and they checked his eyes, I think he had 20/20 vision. Because when Jesus does something, he does it first class. He wouldn't make him with astigmatism or anything like that. I think he gave him perfect vision. And so he asked the question, how did this happen? How did you get your sight back? He answered, verse 11, and said, and again, just notice his testimony, a very straightforward testimony of what happened. A man that is called Jesus made clay and anointed mine eyes and said unto me, go to the pool of Siloam and wash. And I went and washed and I received sight. I mean, that was the story. I said, this man called Jesus. He didn't call him Lord, didn't call him the Christ. He just said, this man called Jesus, Jesus of Nazareth, made clay. He didn't go into the detail about how he made clay. He didn't go into the detail that Jesus spit on the ground to make the clay. He just said, he made clay. He anointed my eyes with that clay, told me to go wash in the pool of Siloam. I went. I did what he said. I washed, and I received sight. And again, the tense of the verb, when he says, I received sight, it happened immediately. It didn't happen over a period of time. When he put the water in his eyes and washed the mud away, he got his vision back immediately. Verse 12, then said they unto him, where is he? I mean, again, they heard what this man called Jesus did, and they said, we want to see him. If he's worked this kind of miracle in your eyes, we'd like to see him. We'd like to meet him. And the man said, I don't know. I don't know where he is. I have no idea where he is. So notice what they did in verse 13. They, again, his neighbors and those that had seen him blind and had now heard his testimony that he had received his sight, brought to the Pharisees him that aforetime was blind. So they took him to the Pharisees. Verse 14, and it was the Sabbath day when Jesus made the clay and opened his eyes. They took him to the Pharisees not because of the miracle, not because they wanted to share the miracle with the Pharisees. They took him to the Pharisees because Jesus had healed, he'd made the clay, anointed his eyes, told him to go wash, and restored his sight on the Sabbath day. And again, that act of healing on the Sabbath day was a breaking of the Sabbath law. And so, I mean, they forgot the miracle, and in their zeal to keep all the rules that they had associated with the Sabbath, they took this man to the Pharisees again to accuse Jesus, the one who had restored sight, of breaking the Sabbath. Look at verse 15. Then again the Pharisees also ask him how he hath received his sight. So they ask him the same question that his neighbors and the other people did. How did you get your eyes back? How did you get your sight back? And this, he gave them the same testimony, the same answer, a little bit shorter, but he gave them the same answer that he gave before. He put clay upon mine eyes, and I washed, and do see. Again, very straightforward. This is what happened. He put clay on my eyes, I washed them, and now I see. So in verse 16, then said some of the Pharisees, this man is not of God. So again, this was an answer you would expect. This was a comment you would expect, we would expect from the Pharisees. They said, this man is not of God because he keepeth not the Sabbath day. If he was of God, he would keep our rules for the Sabbath day. Now you remember when Jesus healed the lame man in John chapter 5, they had the same discussion with him, and he said, look, the man was not made for the Sabbath. The Sabbath was made for man. The Sabbath was made for man. It was set aside as a day of rest. So it was set aside for man to rest from 6 days of labor. That's what Jesus was saying. The Sabbath was made for man. Man was not made to keep all these rules. And again, they were many, and many of them were silly. I mean, if you had a nail loose on your sandal and you drug your foot on the Sabbath, you were guilty of breaking the Sabbath because you were plowing on the Sabbath. You could only walk so far on the Sabbath. If you made a journey further than that, you broke the Sabbath. And so Jesus said, hey, man wasn't made for the Sabbath. The Sabbath was made for man. And so they said, this guy, the one that made this clay and put him on your eyes and gave you your sight back, cannot be from God. He cannot be of God because he is not keeping the Sabbath. But notice, others said, again, other Pharisees said, how can a man that is a sinner do such miracles? Well, if he's not of God, if he is a sinner because he's breaking the Sabbath, then how did he restore this man's sight? How could he do these miracles? And there was a division, that last phrase there of verse 16, and there was a division among them. And so there were some that said, this guy, Jesus can't be of God. And others will say, well, he has to be of God because no man that's not of God could do what this man did. He has to be of God. So in order to, you know, to try to get everybody on the same side, they say unto the blind man again, what sayest thou of him that he hath opened thine eyes? And so because they couldn't agree among themselves, they said, well, what do you think about him? Who do you think he is? What do you think he is? And he replied, he said, he is a prophet. What else could he say? I mean, he knew what happened. He knew what Jesus did. He knew it was a miracle. He had to say, he couldn't say anything else. At the very least, he is a prophet. Well, the Pharisees didn't like that. So in verse 18, they said, but the Jews did not believe concerning him that he had been blind. And so they said, this can't be. This guy probably wasn't blind in the first place. We're gonna fix this once and for all. We'll prove to everybody that he never was blind. So verse 18, but the Jews did not believe concerning him that he had been blind and received his sight until they called the parents of him that had received his sight. So his parents were in the crowd. I mean, he probably went home, and then the neighbors and those that knew that he was blind took him to the Pharisees. His parents probably came along. And again, he probably went home to give his parents the same testimony that he gave everybody else. I mean, if you'd been born blind from birth, probably still living at home with your parents, I mean, they'd be the first ones you'd want to tell. And he went home and said, hey, this man called Jesus. He made clay. He put it on my eyes. He told me to go wash. I went and washed. I can see. And so as the neighbors and the others took him to the Pharisees, his parents went along with him. And again, the Jews, trying to prove that, oh, this never happened, this guy never was blind, called his parents. And they called the parents of him that had received his sight. Said, hey, step forward. We want to ask you a question. And in verse 19, they ask him three questions. And they ask him, saying, is this your son, who ye say was born blind? How then doth he now see? Of course, what they were hoping for is that they would say, well, this is not our son. Or if it was their son, he was not born blind. But they were asking these questions, one right after another. And again, remember, these were the Jewish leaders, the keepers of the law, well-respected by most people. So get the picture in your mind. Here's the Pharisees. Here's this one that's saying, hey, I've received my sight, and the Pharisees disagree on who Jesus was and what he was. And so to disprove the whole story, they called his parents to the front and said, hey, is this your son? You say he was born blind. How does he now see? Well, they answered the question. In verse 20, his parents answered them and said, we know that this is our son. No doubt in our mind, this is our boy. You can rest assured that this is our son. And you can rest assured that he was born blind. We can attest to you, we can witness to you, that our son has been blind ever since he was born. But, in verse 21, but by what means he now seeth, we know not. Or who hath opened his eyes, we know not. I mean, we know a couple things. We know he's our son, and we know he was born blind, but how he got his eyes back and who did it, we do not know. Now, again, they probably did, because their son had told them, but they said, he's of age, okay? He's of age, so how old was he? We don't know. But he was old enough to stand before the Pharisees and answer for himself, which probably means he was at least an older teenager, if not older. Okay? Because you became of age at 12 or 13 years old. You became a man in the Jewish society at 12 or 13. So again, we don't know how old he was, but he was old enough to testify in court. He was old enough to bear witness. And so they said, he is of age, ask him, he shall speak for himself. Now, again, you can see the parents, they weren't afraid to answer the first two questions. He's our son, and we can tell you for sure he was born blind. but they wanted to get out of answering the third question. And in verse 22, it tells us why. These words spake his parents because they feared the Jews, for the Jews had agreed already that if any man did confess that he was Christ, he should be put out of the synagogue. And so word had already spread throughout the city that if anybody confessed that Jesus was the Christ, that Jesus was the Messiah, they would be put out of the synagogue. Now, again, the fact that they wanted to evade or avoid answering the question suggests that they already suspected that Jesus was the Christ. I think they already knew in the back of their mind that he was. Who else could make mud, make clay, and put it on their son's eyes and restore sight? They probably said, this indeed is the Messiah. This indeed is the Christ. No man could do this. This man has to be of God. But they didn't want to say that because they knew if they said that, they would be put out of the synagogue. Now, being put out of synagogue was being excommunicated. Okay? You were kicked out of the church, so to speak. Now, they did it. Sometimes they do it for 30 days. Sometimes they do it longer. Sometimes you could be kicked out for a lifetime. And when you were put out of the synagogue, the call was that everybody that saw you in public cursed you. That was the custom. That if you were put out of the synagogue, you were publicly cursed. You could not interact with other people socially. You could not interact with other people for business. And of course, the worst thing is they thought you were cut off from God. Now, I'm sure there were many people that were excommunicated, put out of the temple, that were probably closer to God than the ones that put them out of the synagogue. But those that were doing the putting out thought that if they put you out of the synagogue, you were cut off from God. And so it's easy to understand why the parents didn't want to answer this question. But notice, when they didn't answer, they put their son on the spot so that he would have to answer. Okay? And so they put their son in harm's way. Well, you know, he's old enough. Let him speak for himself. And what they were saying is, if you want to excommunicate him, go ahead and excommunicate him. But we're not gonna answer that question because we don't know. We don't know. So they said, again, in verse 23, therefore said his parents, he is of age, ask him. So they did. Verse 24, then again called they the man that was blind and said unto him, give God the praise, we know that this man is a sinner. And so, again, give God the praise. We know this Jesus of Nazareth is a sinner. And what they wanted this man to do was say in front of this crowd, yeah, I agree, he is a sinner. But notice what the man said, and we'll quit with this verse tonight. He answered and said, again, this was the blind. He is the blind man that whose sight was restored. He answered and said, whether he be a sinner or no, I know not. One thing I know, that whereas I was blind, now I see. He said, look, I don't know if this man is a sinner or not. I don't know. I can't argue with you about theology. I can't argue with you about religion. You are the Pharisees. You are the rulers. You know much more about that than I do. I'm not in any position to judge if this man is a sinner or not. But one thing I do know. One thing I know for sure. I was blind, and now I can see. I was blind, and now I can see. You know, we talk to a lot of people today about salvation. I have, and I'm sure you have too. You talk to people about their need for a Savior. You try to help them see that they're lost, and there's a penalty for being lost, and that penalty is to be separated from God. And you tell them about Jesus, that Jesus is the only hope they have. He's the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh to the Father but by me, he said. And in many cases, I'm sure you've experienced this, they want to argue with you about religion. They want to argue with you about theology. You know, they'll take something that's in the Bible. They'll take something that's in the Bible, and they'll try to get you into a deep theological discussion about that thing to try to deflect, you know, what the Holy Spirit is probably convicting them of, their need for a Savior. And the answer that this man that was blind and no longer blind gave to the Pharisees, I think, is a good answer to use with people that want to argue with you about religion and argue with you about theology. Just say, hey, I'm not qualified to talk about stuff like that. I mean, you know, I know some things about the Bible, but I don't know a lot about that subject. But I want to tell you one thing I do know. I was lost, and I've been saved. I was blind spiritually, but now I can see spiritually. I was apart from God, but now I'm one of his children. I can't talk to you about the things that I'm not sure of, but I can sure talk to you about the things that I know. And I know that I've been saved. Let's talk about that. And I think it would be a good way to respond to those people that want to argue with you about religion and about theology, to just say, well, you probably know more about that stuff than I do, and so I'm not qualified to discuss it with you, but let me tell you something that I do know. Let's talk about that. Thank you for being here tonight. I want you to notice I'm letting you out 5 minutes early. Not as much as Adam did, but 5 minutes early. Men will be praying, ladies will be praying. If you'd like to join them, please do that. Let's stand together and we'll have a word of prayer. Be dismissed.